All right, it looks like at least by 1 of the clocks, it's 6 o'clock, so why don't we go ahead and get started. Good evening. I'll open tonight's hearing. My name's Dan Olson, and I'm the county's hearings officer. This is a land use hearing on files number 247-16-000560-CU and 247-16-000561-SP. The applicants are Jeff and Margie Robertson, and the request is for a conditional use and site plan review to establish a commercial dog kennel on property property zoned exclusive farm use and airport safety combining zone. The hearing will proceed as follows. County staff will identify the applicable criteria, summarize the proposed request, and the staff's recommendations. The applicant and the applicant's representative will then have an opportunity to testify, to explain the proposal, respond to county staff, submit any new evidence, and so forth. I will next call on anyone speaking in favor of the application. After that, I will hear from anyone who is opposed to the application or who is uncertain or maybe just has questions to ask. Then we will hear from the applicant in final rebuttal, and I'll ask staff for any final comments. If you have written material to submit, please hand it to me so I can record it on the exhibit list and stamp it, so that it gets into the official record. I'll also ask that anyone who proposes to testify or who wants to testify when you sit down there, put your name and address for the record so that we know who testified. Anyone who testifies or who has previously submitted written comments is a party and will receive notice of the decision and has an opportunity to appeal if you're dissatisfied. The applicable criteria for this application are set out in the staff report and recommendation. State law provides that failure to raise an issue either orally or in writing before the close of the record with enough specificity that I'm able to respond to that issue may preclude you from raising that issue later in an appeal. State law also provides that failure of the applicant to raise constitutional or other issues relating to proposed conditions of approval with sufficient specificity to allow the county or its designee to respond to that issue precludes an action for damages in circuit court. Now, I'll explain this more at the close of testimony, but just so you know, any party has an opportunity at the conclusion of the testimony tonight to request a continuance of the hearing or that the record be held open for at least 7 days. If you have additional information to submit or need additional time to respond to evidence that's been submitted tonight, you must do that before the close of the hearing, and as I said, I'll remind you at that time. I know nothing about the applicant other than what I have read in the materials. I have read all the materials, including the comments that have been received so far. I have no conflicts of interest. I've had no ex parte contacts with anyone related to the application. I did not conduct a site visit. My job is to apply the standards and criteria in the code and the applicable laws. I'm not a policy maker. So please address your testimony to the applicable criteria set out in the staff report or explain why you think that other criteria may apply. Please note that you may submit written comments rather than testify. And I ask that you try to avoid repetitious testimony and keep your comments to the criteria. If your comments are similar to another speaker's, you may simply just indicate that you agree with those comments if you wish. As I indicated, if you wish to speak, please come forward to the microphone, state your full name, spelling your last name, and give your complete address with zip code. If you represent a group, please state whom you are representing. Before we go any farther, does anyone wish to raise any procedural concerns or challenge my ability to conduct this hearing this evening? All right, seeing none, let's go ahead with the staff report.
Cynthia Smith with the County Planning Division. And before I do my present my brief staff report, I just want to let everybody know that this is being recorded, and so if we could get everybody to speak into the microphone clearly, that'd be helpful. As indicated, before the hearings officer is a conditional use permit and a site plan review to allow for a commercial dog kennel. Repeating application, the applicant is Jeff and Margie Robertson. They're represented by Michael McGeehan, attorney. Property owners are Nancy Hancock and Jeff and Jennifer Edwards. File numbers have been stated by the hearings officer. The subject property is directly east of the Bend Airport on Peacock Lane. The address is 22655 Peacock Lane. I've provided an aerial photo and mapped of the subject property and the surrounding area. To my right over here, nice colorful map. So if we need to use that for reference, if any neighboring property owners want to use that as a reference point, that's there for that. The proposed facility would be located in the northwestern region on the parcel, and I'll let the applicant explain more about that. And my staff report's also described where this is proposed to be located. Staff will rely on the prior circulation of the staff report. I've provided copies of the staff report to the table on the table to my right, along with the agenda. Notice of tonight's hearing and the prior application was mailed to surrounding property owners within 750 feet of the subject property and to public agencies. We received numerous comments expressing concern about the following the proposed commercial kennel, and they include traffic impacts to the surrounding area, road impacts to Peacock Lane, including access to the site, noise and odor impacts, waste disposal and groundwater contamination, impacts to rural character and property values. These are all have been addressed in my staff report. Staff received a comment today from a neighboring property owner who was unable to attend the hearing. This individual does request the written record be left open after tonight's hearing. Just wanted to present that. Also, after the latest notice of public hearing, staff received comments from the Oregon Department of Aviation and the Bend Airport. I will provide these comments to the hearings officer. I've also provided these comments to the applicant's attorney. On page 13 of my staff report, I addressed the noise. The noise contour of the Bend Airport noise impact boundary, pardon me. And what these comments discuss is that there's a new noise contour that's been adopted. However, I want to point out that they talk of this noise contour. However, the Robertson's application came in prior to the actual adoption by the Board of County Commissioners of this new noise contour. It was adopted by the board on August 10th, but it did not take effect until November 9th of 2016. Speaking with our transportation planner, he does recommend that a declaration of anticipated noise agreement be filed, but we can discuss that, or staff can present a memo to the record addressing that as well. But I just wanted to put that out there. It's not something that staff believes is make or break for the application, but it's new information that is in the record.
Let me just make sure I understand. So the Board of County Commissioners adopted some new noise contours that.
Yeah, they were, yes, I think they, let me see if I.
And is it, So is that the document that you're going to introduce into the record? Is that?
Yes, there's two comments, one from Oregon Department of Aviation and then also Gary Judd with the Bend Airport.
Okay.
Gary Judd at the Bend Airport discussed the 2013 airport master plan and how this property is in now the 55 DNL noise contour lines is how he talked about it. But it wasn't until August of this last year, 2016, that the board adopted the ordinance, but not by emergency, so then it became effective in November. And this application was submitted in September.
Was it adopted as a land use ordinance or some other kind of ordinance? Do you know?
I think it was a land use ordinance. I'd have to look at it.
Okay. So I just want to make sure I understand. Are you going to introduce those?
I can do it now.
Yeah, why don't we go ahead and do it now just so I have them and I can mark them.
I will get those to you in a
minute.
Okay. I'll just finish the wrap this.
Sure.
Just to wrap up my staff report, staff recommended additional review in those areas that were raised by neighboring property owner comments, and other issues, whether the commercial kennel will not force a significant change or increase the cost of farm and forest practices to the surrounding area, whether it's compatible with existing projected uses on surrounding properties, if it's the design and site is adequate to minimize noise and odor, does it provide a safe environment, meeting internal pedestrian circulation and parking, and whether the buildings and structures shall be harmonious with the proposed and neighboring buildings. Several things there that I've requested additional review. That concludes my brief but spectacular presentation on my staff report.
I had a couple questions. On pages 22 and 23, there's this discussion about the pedestrian walkways, and you indicate that staff wasn't able to basically come to a conclusion. And I want to make sure I understand I think, as I understand it, the standard that you're concerned with is that whether the site plan adequately is designed to provide a safe environment while offering appropriate opportunities for privacy and transition from public to private spaces.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess when you say public to private spaces, is that meaning like the residents from the...
I look at that, and since we're reviewing traffic and parking, I look at that as going from, say, a vehicle, which is your private space, to the public space of the parking lot and into a commercial building.
Okay. Okay. And then similarly, I had a couple questions on the standards. One was on page 26. Says under 2C, says walkway shall be at least 5 feet in paved unobstructed width. And then D also says walkways must be clearly identified through the use of elevation, speed bumps, a different paving material, or other similar method. And as I understand it, the applicant's proposing gravel walkways. Is that correct? I guess I'm looking, look at the standard, and it talks about paved, and I didn't see that the staff report addressed that, but maybe I'm just not understanding the application.
And I'm trying to remember.
It looks like the applicant says...
Yeah, because we waived the paving. Or no. Yeah, I think that was my staff comment mentions that other than the mention of gravel walkways, you know, the way the code reads, it would be paved, unobstructed. Gravel's not a pavement.
Correct. So there's not some other standard that would waive this or something like that.
No.
So, okay.
We understand that it's we have to take it for what it is, the way it reads. There's no exceptions for rural.
I didn't know if maybe there might be
rural development like this, unless someone were to change the code, to change the code.
And then finally, on page 34, there's a theme to this: the parking and layout. Just isn't very clear to me from the documents, and I know staff had some questions about it too. So I want to make sure I understand kind of where we're at on it. There's this issue about that 90 degree stalls are supposed to be 20 feet, and the ones shown on the plan, at least at the time of the staff report, were only 18 feet. There haven't been any changes, as far as you know. Okay.
The applicant may present
modifications. Okay. Great. Okay, that's all I had. Thank you. Okay, we'll mark that exhibit one. All right. All right. Thank you.
Sure. Good evening. For the record, I'm Michael McGeehan. I'm the attorney for the applicant, Jeff and Margie Robertson. And I'm going to summarize a little bit about the property in the area, just provide some additional details beyond what you heard from staff. I'm going to ask Tiffany Farrell, who is going to be the owner, occupant, and supervisor of the kennel, to explain a little bit about the operations and how they're going to run the kennel. And then you're also going to hear a little bit from our engineer just about some of the design elements. I'll probably invite him to speak about the traffic issue that you just mentioned, although it might be something that we'll just try to cover in our post-hearing submission. I can say, as far as the, just while I'm thinking of it, the question about the 20-foot stalls for the 90 degrees, that's something that we easily have room to do. Okay. And so I, for instance, we will still have three 90-degree spaces that are directly in front of the kennel building, and these we can extend out to 20 feet, and we will do that, and we'll still have plenty of room to park here. The configuration of the parking, just to explain a little bit more, we have three sets of garage doors here. This building used to be an auto garage and a shop, and so we're going to keep the garage doors in place. But because of the openings for the garage doors, we can't put 90-degree parking across the entire front. We're going to have that across over here. Practically speaking, we expect that 90% of the customers are going to use these three front parking spaces, and we don't anticipate ever having too much more traffic than that, just based on the size of the kennel. I also should note that there is a concrete apron that's right in front of the garage building, and we'll have curb stops at each of these three 90-degree spots just to make sure that there's space for pedestrian access and safe pedestrian access. And I will address that particular criteria about paved pedestrian areas. I'm not certain that it would apply to this particular parking lot. I think that for an actual sidewalk or pedestrian walkway, it should be paved with concrete. But what we're proposing here is a hard-packed gravel for car parking, and then there is going to be an existing concrete walkway in the front of the building that patrons will use to come in and out. So back to the property. As we explained in the burden of proof, and I won't reiterate too much, but the existing shop building is bolded here. It's in the far northwest corner of the property. The crosshatched area is what is currently irrigated and what will remain irrigated and will be farmed by Mr. and Mrs. Farrell in their occupation of the property. So we're really not changing, we're not proposing to change anything about the farm use of the property. We're just going to be converting what was an auto shop restoration building up here in this corner to the kennel. We'll be building the kennels directly south of the shop building, and that won't be open to the public. The only thing that will be open to the public will be the garage, the main service center where the parking spaces are. And I should say so that the Farrells are here tonight, and then Mr. and Mrs. Robertson, who are partners with the Farrells in the kennel operation, are here too. And we can try to field any questions that you might have. So you can see from the map that Ms. Smith had and from this exhibit, we have 40 acres here, and it is directly to the east of the Bend Airport area. The Bend Airport, I don't know how much familiarity you have with it. It is a mainly dedicated to private planes. There are no commercial flights in and out, but it has experienced significant growth in the last 20 to 30 years in two particular areas. One of them is with a couple of small kit plane manufacturers that have moved in. This building here, this L-shaped building that's directly west of us, is occupied by Epic Air. And they make a very expensive kit jet product. I'm not certain how many people they employ, but traffic to their facility comes in through this Gibson Air Park Road that borders us on the west. The other major thing that's been happening at the airport in the last 20 or 30 years is helicopter activity. Bend and Central Oregon Community College in particular have been involved in a program, a grant-funded program for helicopter training, and so there has been an increase in helicopter traffic at the Bend Airport. The most recent plans for the airport call for an expansion of the helicopter area in the northeast section of the airport, of the airfield, that is, way up toward the top of this particular exhibit. And east of that, the runway, the expanded runway that you see here. The west side of the airport is built out with hangars. There's a FBO building that's right here. The city airport policies have tried to focus on the east side of the airport in the last 20 or 30 years as the place where they want to see the growth. And so you have the Epic facility that's moved in within the last 20 years, and then some other hangar buildings that have begun to get built out on the east side. And that's going to continue according, if the airport plan is followed, all the way, basically, if you would follow the Gibson Air Park Road north past where it stops, that this entire area up here is Bend Municipal Airport and owned by the City of Bend and leased out to a contractor that's supposed to be developing it. So what you're going to see in the future is more private development, more aircraft support type functions, and more industrial activity on the east side of the airport adjacent to us. As far as the comments that we received today or that the staff received today from the Bend Airport and the state, it looks to us like we're going to be asked to sign some kind of a noise waiver or noise easement, and we'll look at that. The first I've seen it is tonight, so we'll respond to that. And I agree with staff, it shouldn't really, doesn't seem like it's going to be a problem or a major factor in whether the application is approved. So one of the other major features of the property is that it is cut off, well, it's bisected really by an irrigation canal that you see here on this dashed line. And one thing, and when I was reviewing our materials, one thing that we explained was that there's an access road that we're going to be using to service the kennel building, but that access road actually goes all the way through to Gibson Air Park Road, and we've confirmed that that would be available to us as an alternate point of access besides Peacock. So people will be able to, for instance, take a left on Peacock and then drive all the way through and exit onto Gibson or vice versa if necessary. So that's...
Is that currently available? Or
currently, it the only thing, there's a gate there that's locked, but it's the owner's gate. So my clients are in the process of buying the property, and they will have... they intend to clear that and to leave that gate open. And at the very least, it will serve as emergency access in addition to what we've explained in our plan. A little bit about the vicinity. Besides the airport, as you can see, it's fairly sparsely populated. It is, the irrigated sections are fairly obvious from this picture, and they're devoted almost entirely to hay production, although there is a section of this property south of us that has recently developed a marijuana grow operation with some greenhouses and the related greenhouse equipment down there. So that's really, I think, the only new thing as far as the surrounding use that we didn't include in our supplemental statement. And the current production on the property is hay as well. Same with the properties that are the closest to us up over on the other side of Peacock. And I'm going to ask Andrew Houston, who designed this slide and then the other site plan for the building, to explain some of the design elements and why he chose to...
Before you step down, sure. Is that particular plan in the record?
Yes.
Sometimes on dial, it's hard to see the site plans very clearly.
Sure.
Okay. So what it looks like we have a request for continuance. Could I ask that you provide a decent size, doesn't have to be huge, clear copy of that and the site plan showing the parking with your final submittal? I just find sometimes it's hard to get a good print off of
and I'll try to refer to them, actually, because we do have them in the record already.
Okay, great.
This, for instance, the bigger one that shows the entire 40 acres is Exhibit 1 in what we already produced. And then Exhibit 2 is a close-up just of the northwest corner of the property. So I just blew up those two exhibits. That's all we're seeing here.
For the record, Andrew Houston, H-U-S-T-O-N, representing Parametrics, Inc., surveying and civil engineering consulting firm here in Bend. So we had a few tasks throughout this process. The first was to put together the overall site plan for the property and overlaying COIDs, irrigated areas over it, which you can see in the hatched area here. And then, secondly, we, for the record, I'm a professional land surveyor in the state of Oregon, representing as a project manager. I consulted with professional engineers in the state of Oregon to do some of this work, but I oversaw getting some physical features tied and some contours, mainly to tie down the location of the existing concrete pad and building and a few of the services, water and power that existed out there, as well as a propane tank that's just north of the existing building there. Initially, we set out to design a domestic septic tank and drain field so that they had a bathroom for the facility. And then we started looking at how to deal with the animal solid waste. We contacted the Oregon Department of Agriculture, who said that there's a couple different ways to handle it. You could store it in an above-ground tank or above-ground canisters. So we provide that information. The tanks would, with the water, would fill up so quickly that you'd almost have to get them pumped too frequently. So the other option that they recommended was physically clear the solid waste and keep it in bins above ground, and then provide a vegetated swale to collect the liquid waste, which the vegetated swale provides filtering of the water. And through our research, it was determined that it's actually about 20 gallons per kennel is used to clean up the kennel. So there's a good amount of dilution that occurs prior to getting to the vegetated swale. So and then there was a couple other. We provided some information regarding fire access, as well as parking, which you see here. And as Michael mentioned, extending those parking stalls 2 feet is not an issue. And that's about it.
So when those Department of Agriculture rules, are those specifically for kennels, or are they for like agricultural waste generally? Do you know?
Agricultural waste generally. We talked to Not Landfill. They already accept other kennels, solid waste. So it was a matter of contacting the Bend Garbage or Cascade Disposal to make sure that they do pick up, and they do. So this used to fall under someone else's jurisdiction. This is actually the second kennel. I think the other one's in Harney County that's been approved that the Oregon Department of Agriculture has overseen. So.
So this actually does have to get approved by the Department of Agriculture.
Yep. I don't think so. They didn't mention any formal process. I think as long as the county deems it.
Could you explain that a little bit more about the Harney County kennel and why you brought that up?
Brought that up because that's exactly what they're using is the vegetated swale. That's why they recommended that. So.
And we also have Tiffany Farrell, who is going to be the owner of the property and the operator of the kennel, and she's going to explain some of the operations.
I'm Tiffany Farrell. I live at 63139 Bend, Oregon, currently. My husband and I are hoping to be moving on to the Peacock site and open up.
Everyone here, just want to double check, it's pretty quiet. Could you see if you can speak into the microphone a little more? Thank you.
Hopefully we'll be moving and opening up we're wanting to open up a commercial kennel. We will be on-site owner-operator.
Ms. Farrell, why don't you explain where the house is in relation to the kennel, or where the kennel is going to be?
So on the 40-acre parcel, the house is... The house is right here that we'll be living. My husband, my son, and my daughter, and myself. And then this is the kennel that we're proposing to put in. This building, the existing building right now that's there, we would use that as a indoor doggy play area. We would also have that as our office and an employee break room and a dog wash for our dogs that get dirty and owners want them clean when they go home. But one reason why we really liked this, when we were looking and we picked this, is because we wanted a place that we could be on site, because there's not a kennel that has people that we like. There's not a place that we like that they stay with the dogs overnight. So a lot of the places, they leave the dogs, you know, they leave them at 11, come back at 6 a.m., and that's just not the kind of business that we want to do. We want to do more of a luxury where the dogs have suites, not crates, and that kind of goes into our the dog houses that we are proposing to build. So we were hoping to build 5 of these, and these are our luxury dog cottages. So they're just small little houses. You would walk in the little living room right here, and it would be a common area for when you are in there with the dogs. And there's only 6 kennels per cottage. Totally insulated, just like a house would be. You can see that there are 6, and those are their bedrooms. That's completely enclosed inside. It will have a door that will open up to an outdoor run, which would be fenced with chain link fence on the top and then the composite roof. And then it would also extend to another run out here that would be artificial turf, canine grass. It's made specifically for dogs. It helps reduce odor and bacteria. And then that would be fenced in as well with a chain link on top. And that is where they will sleep. That's where they will have their snuggle time with their human companion. We will not be living or sleeping in there, but we will make sure that we spend time with them in the morning and night. And we feed them, and then they go to sleep in here. They do go out after they eat to do their little business. And that's where that will be.
So the outside area that's attached to
the outdoor run?
Right. That has to be opened up for the dogs. They don't have access to it.
Correct.
All the time. Like a dog door or something.
Correct. It will be, they can't, we have to open it for safety reasons. And also then, because when we put them to bed at night, they're in bed. And that's the reason also why we wanted to do 5 of these cottages is... We're going to put dogs of the same temperament together. And everybody knows that a problem would be dog barking. And so that's the other reason is When we have only a few dogs together, they won't be able to hear each other, so you won't have 20 dogs that are all of a sudden going to start barking because they're not going to be able to hear each other. So if these guys are getting fed, these six are getting fed, and the six down here, they don't know that their friends are getting fed until we go in there and we feed them and do all that. But that will be totally enclosed in that house.
Ms. Farrell, could you speak a little bit about what the schedule is going to be for staffing during the day and when the dogs are going to come out, when the dogs are going to come in, when they're going to be fed, et cetera?
So what we are thinking is that the dogs will never be out before 7 a.m. and after 9 p.m. For a couple of reasons. They need to go to sleep. We'll need to go to sleep. Our neighbors will want to go to sleep. So we will bring them in. Or first of all, let me say, we will wake them up about between 7 and 8 a.m. They'll go out. They'll do their little business. They will eat. They will spend about an hour in here before we move them to the bigger facility, the inside and outside facility. And then at nighttime, about 6 o'clock, we will bring them back to their houses and do the same routine again. Feed them, have some couch time with them, let them go out, do their thing, and then put them to bed. Lights out, 9 o'clock.
And when are you going to start taking them inside?
Around 6. We'll take them from the play area, which is the big shop existing now, to their kennels about 6 o'clock so they can eat and settle down and, you know, wind down.
So the outside kennel areas will be basically, when will they be out of use in the evening?
When will these be out?
Oh, no, the big ones.
This big one up here?
Yeah.
Oh, from this, the dogs will not be out here once they're put to bed after 6 p.m.
Okay,
so the play yards are only for daytime use from like 9 to 6-ish. We don't know the exact hours. I mean, it might be 9 to 6:30, 9 to 7, especially in the summertime, you know. But it would never, won't be late or early.
Could you speak a little bit about how the yards are going to be organized and what you're going to be doing there?
So these are where their kennels, their cottages would be. They're the five individual cottages with the dog runs where they, their private area. And then during the day, they'll be brought out in their groups to the existing dog yards that we will have. We'll have four of them. And then we'll have the inside garage that we can rotate. And our philosophy is we're not going to have a huge pack of dogs running together. We want to keep them in smaller sizes of about six to eight dogs at a time together, and they will each be in a separate yard. And each yard is going to have a different activity or theme. One yard might be water activity, one might be agility equipment, one might be puzzles. And what that does is that rotates the dogs so they don't get bored, they don't get agitated. But more importantly, in between rotating them, they will go inside the big building where we will have a resting room, and they will take a nap because dogs are just like kids and they need a nap. That prevents injuries. It prevents excessive barking, crankiness, just makes them happier. So then every time they come out, they're going to go to a new activity, just like at summer camp. And that's the same for in the inside. We'll have two different areas in the inside that they can also go to during bad weather or things like that. So they'll always be doing something different and keeping occupied and happy.
And do you have any plans for particular ways that you're going to handle nuisance barkers or problem dogs at all?
Yes. So with each incoming dog, we will have a screening process. We don't want to listen to a barking dog all day long. So if we do have a dog that's an obsessive barker, we will ask if they don't disclose that in the intake form, we will ask the customer if we can use a non-invasive barking collar, which is a citronella collar. The dogs bark, it sprays citronella out, it doesn't hurt them, it's not cruel. If they don't allow that, or if that does not work, we will ask them not to return. We've done a lot of research in this last year, and we actually went to Las Vegas for a doggy kennel trade show, and it was amazing the information that's out there. And on our intake form, you grade your dog, you interview the dogs. It's a green, yellow, or red. Obviously, we don't want any red dogs. We want all green dogs. And so we'll be using that intake process on how to pick the dogs that come in and make sure they're a good fit.
The only dogs that will be here are dogs that are being boarded overnight. Is that correct? It's not like a daycare.
Correct, but they'll be there during the day.
Right, but not just to drop off your dog on your way to work and pick him up in the evening.
No, we were wanting a kennel, so...
Can you elaborate any more, Ms. Farrell, on any particular products that you're going to use to try to cut down on the waste and ensure cleanliness? And
so, the inside, we are hoping to use Permatec flooring, which is specifically made dog flooring. And then on the outside, where the kennels are, we are going to use, hopefully, intending to use canine grass, which is also made specifically for dogs. And then there's companies that work with these products that have commercial cleaners. So there are natural enzymes and cleaners to sterilize every day. Also, there's big machines that we will use to sterilize the insides every day. And then the outdoor carpet, if you will, actually gets like washed with a big machine, a minimum of once a week. And
Mr. Houston spoke a little bit about the waste disposal for the dogs when they eliminate. Have you made any effort to confirm the availability of those utilities?
Yes. Jeff talked to Bend Garbage, and what they do is they have several kennels that they already do this for. They recommend that we use the smaller garbage cans with a heavy-duty liner that helps eliminate the waste, and they come weekly and pick it up. And actually, they want us to mix the dog waste with other garbage. So, you know, excess dog food, any paper towels, anything like that, because actually it does go right into the landfill with the rest of the garbage, and it's a practice that they're used to doing, so...
And could you point out on the map there where the customer areas are going to be and then where the off-limit staff-only areas are going to be?
So when you drive in, either way, we'll have an office right in the front part of this building. We will allow our clients, obviously, to look at our facility because we want them to know where their dog is going to be and that it's going to be comfortable. They will only be allowed to look when they're escorted on a tour. People aren't just going to be roaming. So that would be this first house right here, this first little cottage right here. And then we'll have a window in this back that they will be able to come and look and see the play yard back here. So, and you can also see it from the parking. There's another parking spot, the ADA right here. There's a little way that people could look and see back there. We can show them that way. So that way, then the dogs can play back here without getting agitated from seeing people up there because it's pretty private.
In terms of the insulation, you mentioned you went to a conference. Are there kennel association standards about on insulation, or what is how when you say it's going to be insulated like a house, you mean like residential insulation? Is that what you're talking about?
Right. We want our dogs to be comfortable and safe, but we also want it quiet inside and out. So there are no regulations right now on kennel buildings in the state of Oregon, but I think our idea was R15 insulation. Is that right, Jim? So.
And as far as construction, Ms. Farrell, these are going to be stick-built log cottages. Is that right? They're not going to be
stick-built homes. They're going to be very cute, very lovely. We're using colors that are natural earth tone. We want to use grays and dark browns and some reclaimed wood. The roofs have to be composite to be in compliance with the airport. All of our lighting will be downlit lighting, also within compliance of the airport. The kennels will be, this garage is already, this building is already heated, and these, of course, will be heated as well.
All right. I think
do you have anything else for Ms. Farrell?
Let me just double check. Nope. That's good. Thank you.
Thank you.
I wanted to make a few more points about compatibility, and then I expect we'll be finished. We don't foresee any real major conflicts with any of the neighboring uses. We've tried to go point by point, identifying all of the neighboring farm uses. They are, as I explained earlier, predominantly hay, now with a little bit of marijuana production too. But in any event, these are not noise-sensitive farming activities at all. We don't think that even if there are, we think that the noise attenuation will be enough because of the location of the property and its distance from the neighbors that people will barely know that we're there. But even so, we don't think that it's going to be a factor that in any way would significantly change or disrupt farming activity in the neighborhood based on the current hay farming pattern. So we think that that criteria is something that we've satisfied. And for the same reason, we don't think that this project poses anything that's going to be incompatible with the rural character of the neighborhood. I think you probably saw in the staff report that staff had determined that a traffic study was not going to be necessary, and staff calculations were based, in my view at least, on a very liberal estimate about how many trips there would be per day. I think 30 dog trips per day, which perhaps if you had a really robust kind of dog daycare kind of business, you might see something like that. But when you're looking at more extended stay boarding, we think that that estimate of staff is probably too much, maybe by a factor of two. So in any event, the traffic impacts weren't enough to warrant a traffic study under the plan. But we think that with the extra access available from Gibson to potentially offset any traffic on Peacock, that will further reduce any kind of effect on the neighbors to the north. Obviously, we want to be good neighbors, and Mr. and Mrs. Farrell are going to be living on the property. They will have a vested interest in trying to minimize any kind of potential problems or disruptions from that the business might pose to the area. I do expect we will be submitting some additional information about the noise and the insulation, and just to further establish that, I pointed out in our materials a recent kennel application that was approved by Deschutes County Hearings Officer, also on EFU property, I believe, or perhaps it was even mixed-use 10-acre property up in Redmond, where the hearings officer concluded
that noise attenuation from a 100 up to 125 dog kennel would be satisfactory at between 300 to 600 feet from the kennel. And as we pointed out in our materials, our closest neighbors here would be the ones to the north, and they are nearly, the closest one is nearly 500 feet away from the proposed kennel. So under that prior decision in the George matter, it's file number 07110. I will submit a copy of that after the hearing for you. But we think that's a good rule of thumb, and it's something that hopefully will give people a little bit of confidence that this isn't really going to disrupt any of the farming activities in the neighborhood. So between the fact that our proposed kennel is relatively small in scale, the nature of the hobby farms around us being hay-producing properties that aren't going to be affected by any kind of noise, even if there were to be any kind of significant noise. And then the predominant effect of the Bend Airport here to the west of us, we think that this is an appropriate location for a kennel. We don't think it's going to disrupt the character of the neighborhood. It's really screened fairly well, if you look at it, not only from our own property, because we've got the hay-producing area to the east of us. There's also a little bit of screening here north of the shop building, and then the kennels are all going to be nestled behind the main shop building, as you saw, so that they won't be immediately visible to somebody who's driving by to the north on Peacock. So we think it's a well-placed project, and as I said, we hope to be good neighbors and a valuable addition to the neighborhood. Do you have any additional questions?
I don't think so right now. Thank you. All right, as I indicated earlier, I will now hear from anyone else speaking in favor of the application. Do we have anyone else in that category? All right. Now I'll go ahead and then hear testimony from those who are opposed to the application or who just want to make a comment or have a question. And there's no particular order here, so come on.
My name is Pamela Kelly, and I live at 22640 Peacock Lane, Bend. And our property is the property that's immediately north of the proposed kennel. We're on the other side of Peacock Lane from the driveway that they propose to use for regular access to the kennel. There's not very much distance between their gate and our gate, and our house is right behind the gate. So my major concern is traffic coming down Peacock Lane and going to the kennel. Any previous traffic we had was probably 3 or 4 cars, not many trips per day, and some days no trips at all to the garage that's there. And we would go back and forth, you know, once or twice a day. So this is a considerable increase in the amount of traffic that is proposed there. And I believe on the report, the estimated traffic was 35 to 45 vehicle trips per day. So I don't see that it should be accessed across from our house when there can be other options. There is a long driveway to that property that is quite a distance to the east from us, and there is a track that goes along south of their hay field that ends up across the ditch and right in front of their proposed cottages or additional kennels. And that, unfortunately, I suppose, goes right in front of the residents for this place. And then, so that's my major concern, is the access road. I don't think there should be an access road to this property from Peacock Lane. We have pets. We work on our property. We're outside the fence. I think there's a danger of, because vehicles will be turning into that driveway, always turning into that driveway and coming out and turning, there's a potential for pets being hit or whatever. It's also mentioned that that's a gravel road. That road was graveled once. It has not been re-graveled, and it's turned back into dirt, and that's another issue with dust and people turning in front. I've addressed many other issues in writing here that I will give you. We are the only neighbors that are the closest to this kennel, and we also, in any of these writings, most of the issues are addressing farm use. There's no real mention of how it impacts people living there, you know, their quality of life in that area. So I would like to bring that part up too, that there's many, many mentions of will not interfere with farm use, will not interfere with haying, will not interfere with those other kinds of rural activities, but nothing about quality of life for the people that are living closest to this kennel.
So are you the house that the representative for the applicant was indicating is like 500 feet approximately from the kennel? Is that
yes,
your house?
Yeah. Now, 500 feet from the kennel does not mean it's 500 feet from where they turn.
Right.
Where they
right.
They turn directly in front of our house.
Okay. And do you know what the zoning is on your property?
On our property?
Mm-hmm.
We do not have farm deferral because at the time we purchased our property, it was they weren't awarding farm deferral for under 10 acres. And we have 5 acres or 4-point-something acres.
Okay.
And we have used that for horses and cattle since we purchased the property. There were a couple other things. I did write some comments, and I'll give you these copies here, but again, talking about noise, originally there was no mention of any effect on residents close by. There were some references to that sometimes dogs, you know, on farm property bark, but we don't have any in the area that are a problem with us. Let's see. I really think that I can't address the rest of this. There's quite a bit here, and it's going to take more than 3 minutes, so I think I'll give you all of the paperwork. Would you like it now?
Yes, please. Okay, great. Thank you. This is what I've got is two letters, just for the record, from Michael P. and Pamela J. Kelly. One's a three-page letter, and one's a two-page front and back. I'm going to mark those exhibits 3 and 4.
I did remember one thing.
Oh, go ahead. Just make sure you sit down there so we can.
Yes. The owner's residence is further away from the kennel than we would be. And that's a concern, too. And they say they're going to be supervising the area. They're so far away that we would see something that would be wrong before they would. And if we were going to have a kennel on our property, it certainly would not be as close as that kennel is to our house. So the fact that supervision 24/7, I don't think that that's a realistic expectation if a person is living in a house that far away.
Okay, good.
So.
Thanks. All right, who's next?
My name is Dennis Wellborn. I live at 22825 McGrath Road. I'm two properties away from the proposed property here. I have a real concern about the traffic on that road as well, and particularly the way the staff report talks about estimations and what level of traffic requires a traffic report. According to their numbers, if two more dogs were housed in that facility above the 60% they talk about, a traffic report would be required. That seems like it, playing with numbers to avoid a traffic report. The other concern I have is the traffic that will be going on Peacock. It'd be people that aren't used to driving on a gravel road, so they drive too fast, create too much dust, create a bad washboardy road. And you're talking about trips that are going all the way to the end of Peacock Lane versus the traffic that goes to the residences not as far up that road. If you're talking about addition of this kind of traffic, you're talking about a serious percentage of traffic if you weight the trips versus how far they actually travel up the road. The other concern I have is the lighting on the property. The staff report says all new lighting will be downcast. It doesn't say anything about correcting the lighting that is existing now that currently violates county ordinances. My property is, like I said, several properties away from this building. It's clearly visible to me, especially at night when those lights are on all night long. I would ask that any approval of this state that all lighting, not just new lighting, but all lighting has to correct and has to follow county lighting ordinances. I do have a question if this is going to be a 24/7 facility and the owners are not there, they're on vacation, where are the people going to be living that are actually going to be watching this facility 24/7? Is this shop area now going to become a dwelling? That's it.
Okay, great. Thank you. Next. Have anyone else?
My name is Tom Maddox. I live at 22670 Peacock Lane, Bend. My testimony tonight is quite lengthy, so to expedite proceedings, I'm going to submit it to you as written, but I do have a couple of things to say. To begin with, I would like to request that you keep the comment open for 30 days after tonight so that we can rebuttal and additional comments to information that has come forward tonight. And I received new information late this afternoon that I would like to include in a written testimony, but there wasn't time to include it in this. So the request would be a 30-day opening after today, please.
I'll deal with that towards the end once I find out where we're at.
Okay. The supplemental burden of proof that was submitted by the applicant's attorney that was dated November 21st, 2016, has numerous errors in it. There's some of them are just simple mistakes. Some of them are flat factual errors that have been distorted. It's addressed here. I would request that you do not give additional weight to applicant's attorney's supplemental burden of proof with its incorrect information, that you would carefully examine the information put forth to you that contradicts items that they have put in there.
Can we get just a couple of examples?
It's in here, and rather than bringing it completely through the oral, I just assume submit it in the written.
All right. And where's your property in relation to the... I'm going to use the one down below if that's easier.
This is mine up here.
Okay.
This is Peacock Lane.
Uh-huh.
This is Peacock Lane. My property sits here.
All right, so directly, is that north, oriented north?
Directly north. The proposed kennel is here. My property sits in here. Also in staff findings, it's noted that staff just copied and pasted some of applicant's attorney's information into their findings. So staff's findings also contain some of the same errors. So in going through this, I would hope you would consider with an open mind that some of the information isn't correct, and the testimonies that are submitted will be considered with equal weight.
Ms. Ford?
Please. All right, so this is a letter dated February 7th. It's 6 pages, and I'm going to mark that Exhibit H5. Great, thank you very much.
My name is Michael Kelly. I live at 22640 Peacock Lane. And I'd like to correct a couple of things in the report. I'll quote page 6 of 13. The property closest to the proposed kennel site to the north fronting Peacock Lane on the other side are either not in active farm use or farm deferral. This is my property. Quote page 3, staff report. The major use of this type of soil is livestock grazing. Since 1980, I have had cattle and horses graze on my property. Every spring or summer, there is work maintaining ditches and water flow. I believe that is active farm use. As for farm deferral, the agent I spoke with told me they were not offering farm deferral on 5 acres at the time. As for one selling, I have a person interested in purchasing my property. As I am 70 this year, I know I cannot do the work much longer. I am sure a dog kennel would be a negative in setting the price for my property. And Pam covered the rest of it, my wife, but I have one more thing to say. If the kennel are going to be in the neighborhood of the lawyers who wrote this plan, I assure you that all the comments would be against the proposal.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. And did you sign in there? Just wanted to double.
Yes, I did.
Okay, super. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Who's next? Do I have anyone else who wishes to testify? Okay. Before I have the applicant come up, I had a question for staff that I forgot to ask staff earlier, and I want to make sure that everybody knows what my question is. The proposal indicate there were some concerns raised in the written comments earlier about, you know, what if this becomes a training or testing facility? What if they become a daycare center? What if they want to do retail, you know, like selling dog food or whatever? And I know some of those uses are allowed as conditional uses in the zone. If they were to, for example, decide to start doing, say, dog training or dog trials or whatever, would they need to go through another conditional use application to add to that use under the code? Is that something they could
potentially modify their existing approval?
And that would be through another
land use
process, public hearing and notice process?
I'd have to. It depends on what they would be proposing.
Mm-hmm.
We would want to, you know, if it were, say, doggy daycare in addition to overnight kennel, we may require a modification to their original approval that would require application and notice. The dog training use, I'd have to look at the zone because I think it's allowed differently. I don't have the full code in there, but it may or may not require a land use review without having that section of code memorized. And I don't think it's in my.
But if I, and that's fine. If I don't have no idea whether I'm going to approve this, but if I was going to approve it, I could always put a condition to that effect if I need.
Yeah,
it.
And I guess, you know, looking right at the way it's listed in the code, commercial dog boarding kennel, or dog training classes or testing trials, if they were to fit in that, either it would be a new conditional use permit in addition to their existing one if it's approved, or they could potentially modify the existing one, assuming it's approved.
Either way, going through a process, a land use process.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Thank you. Sorry, I forgot to ask you that earlier. All right. Just want to double check. No one else in opposition or with just a question or comment? All right. I'll hear from the applicant.
I think we'll probably confine most of our rebuttal to post-hearing submissions. I did want to address a few things. In response to the question about whether this is going to be a 24/7 supervision, it is intended to be a 24/7 supervision. Mr. and Mrs. Farrell, who you heard before, were going to be living on site on the property, will have a caretaker living there and able to watch over the kennel any time that they might be gone. As we indicated in our materials, we're also going to have a staff of up to 5 estimated employees, potentially 3 of whom might be there on-site working at any one time, so it'll be a well-staffed facility. We do expect one thing that I don't think that is in our submission. We will be installing cameras in each of the kennel buildings just as a safety precaution as well as a supervisory feature, and that will allow Mr. and Mrs. Farrell to monitor the kennels even when nobody is on-site. With respect to the lighting of the existing shop building, we're not aware that it violates code, but obviously if it is a code violation, we would want to take care of it, and we don't anticipate that we will be lighting that main shop building anytime significantly after dark, but like I said, we think that it complies currently. As far as the post-hearing period, I would suggest just the usual 14-day period for open submissions followed by a 7-day rebuttal. I think that we're currently somewhere around the 80-day time frame for final decision.
Yeah. Okay, I'll just checking the statute here. I wanted to make sure my memory was correct. So I have a situation here where I have people who are testifying asking for more time, and the applicant is asking for more time, correct? You were to respond to the parking and other issues, is that correct? Are you
yes.
making requests for...
Yes.
Yeah, okay. And as I read the statute, if you're making the request, then the time doesn't count against the 120 days, but I understand the concern. I do think 30 days is too long. What I would like to do is, I think, do a 14, 14, and 7 to give people 2 weeks to respond, since there is quite a bit of information coming in on a number of issues. So I'm going to go through this so hopefully everybody can understand it. I have had requests to continue the hearing. Before I get to that, though, I want to give the staff an opportunity to see if we have any final comments from staff.
I just wanted to address a few things. One of the neighbors was concerned about not looking at the surrounding residential use. And in Chapter 18, 128.015, we do look at the surrounding area and how it's compatible with the surrounding area and not just farm use. So we do address that. I just don't want them to think that we're not looking at that in the review. And the farm zone is a very regulated zone, and so that's why we emphasize the farm uses in the area. My map provides the zoning for the area. The orangey color is farm, and there's also a lighter grayish brown that's also a farm use zone. The yellow is multiple use agricultural, which is primarily small subdivisions in the area. And then, of course, to the west is a darker gray, it looks like, for the airport zone. So I just wanted to point out that some of the neighbors that have commented are in the farm zone. There's a large parcel under management with Deschutes County, and that's also a farm zone property to the north. And then also you were looking for a copy of previous kennel approvals. Staff has submitted right before the first hearing that we were going to have. I submitted a staff memo, and that includes three previous kennel decisions, including the one that you and the applicant were talking about, that was CU07110. I think I've also included CU0567 and CU0823. It should be in dial, and if you have a hard time finding it, just let me know.
That was submitted right before the prior...
Yeah, I think it was January 7th is the date I dated it. I don't know if it got scanned in that same
okay.
date. But I just wanted, just so we don't have redundant information, I knew you were looking to have copies of that.
Yeah. Okay, great.
And that was it. I would also suggest at least 14 for the first comment period, 7 or 14 for the second. And then there's always the 7-day final arguments. The applicant has the ability to waive that if they don't feel they need it.
Okay, thank you. All right, so let me try to explain where we're at. I have had multiple requests to keep the record open, and the statute on this is kind of confusing, so I want to try to make it as easy to understand as I can. I basically have a couple of options. I can continue this actual physical hearing to a date at least 7 days from now, or I can just keep the record open for written submittals, and that's what I've been requested to do and what I'm choosing to do. So what I'm going to do is keep the record open for an additional 14 days from today. So that means close of business 5 o'clock on the 21st of February. Anyone who wishes to submit basically any testimony that you want to give or argument has that two-week period to do that, including the applicant. Then there's an additional 2 weeks from the 14th to the 28th, and during that period of time, anyone who wishes to may submit written testimony or argument in response to the material that's submitted during the first 2 weeks. So you have 2 weeks for initial submittals and then 2 weeks to respond to those initial submittals. And that will expire on, looks like close of business on March 7th. And then the applicant is entitled under the statute to 1 week to submit final written argument, but no new evidence. And the applicant may waive that if the applicant chooses to do so, and that then would be due on close of business on the 14th. So are there any questions about that process? Make sure.
Well, I just want to clarify for everybody that the second 2 weeks, no new information can come in. Only the first 2 weeks is new information. Second 2 weeks is rebuttal, no new information.
Well,
kind of arguments, but no new information on those second 2 weeks.
There's differences of opinion about how that statute works. What I'm hearing here is that at least in Deschutes County, your position is that the second 2 weeks is basically just rebuttal, argument, no new evidence?
No new evidence.
Do you have a position on that?
I've always understood it to be argument or evidence, but only in rebuttal, only offered for
rebuttal evidence, correct.
So it must be tied to something within that first open submission.
Yeah, that's been my understanding of it, too. So that's what I'm going to do, because otherwise I think people are really at a disadvantage, because if something comes in at 5 o'clock on the 21st, they have no way to respond to it.
They would. You can.
But not with new evidence. So if someone says it's black, they can't say it's white, unless there's something in the evidence in the record already.
It has
saying
to be
it's
backed
white.
By what something is already in the record.
So I'm gonna to err on the side of caution, because I think that there would not be an error this way. I'm going to say, again, 14 days to submit new evidence, any kind of evidence you want. Then 14 days, and you may submit evidence then, but only in response to what's been received before. And then finally, 7 days for applicant's rebuttal. Okay, any other questions?
I wanted to make a comment, and I meant to say this earlier. Since we continued the hearing and the applicant agreed to continue it, the clock stops.
My reading of the statute is this period does not count against the 120-day rule.
From the January 10th to February 7th.
Correct. It says statute says if such a request is filed, the hearings open the record. Blah blah blah. A continuance or extension granted pursuant to the section shall be subject to the 120-day rule or 150-day rule unless the continuance or extension is requested or agreed to by the applicant. And my understanding is the applicant has requested.
Or agreed to.
Well, that first extension, we didn't object to the continuance of the hearing. The tolling of the period didn't come up. I don't know if it's going to make a huge issue in the long run. I didn't think that I was waiving the 150 days, but...
Well, under the statute, if you ask for a continuance, you are.
We didn't ask for it, though.
I mean, tonight.
Oh, tonight, obviously.
Yes.
No, I understand that. That
was staff's question, right?
No, I was actually talking about the last 30 days.
Oh, you were? Okay.
Because we continued the hearing. The applicant agreed to the continuance and received that in writing. And so we...
But they didn't waive the 120.
Yeah, we I think we assumed that it was being waived because they accepted the continuance.
Yeah, I think my understand that's something I think we're just going to have to deal with, but my general understanding is unless they've expressly waived it, it's not waived. So.
And just for the people who are totally confused of what we're talking about, we have 150 days to process a application. It has the ability to be the clock to be stopped and continued, and that's what we're discussing right now is where we are in the 150-day clock.
And that's one reason why I didn't go with the 30 days that was requested by one of the participants, because under the statute, if the county doesn't make a decision within a certain time period, then the applicant has the right to go to court and get a judge to approve the use. And at least based on my experience, that's not good for either the applicant or the county or the people who are opposed to the use. So we're trying to get this under the deadline.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.